So today we're going to look at the architectural plans for the third temple. And believe it or not, they've been hidden in plain sight for years and years and years. I think it's time that we took a close look at the third temple. God has all kinds of temples, and He's built so many temples. He's the architect of all the temples that we see in Scripture that are His temples. And there are actually three main principles that God has established so that we can actually know what that third temple is going to look like. So the first principle is this, and I've got Scriptures to back up everything and show notes for you. So the first principle is that earthly temples always reflect the current status of the heavenly temple. So this is what God told Moses. You must make the tabernacle and design all its furnishings according to the pattern I showed you. That's Exodus 25:9. And the writer of Hebrews actually quotes this passage in Hebrews 8:5 and gives a commentary on the tabernacle of Moses. The place where they serve is a copy and shadow. That is, the priests serve in a copy and shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle, see to it that you make everything according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. So the writer of Hebrews is telling us that the earthly tabernacle of Moses was actually a reflection of the heavenly tabernacle at that time. So the first principle is that the earthly temple is going to reflect whatever is going on in the heavenly temple at that time. The second principle is this, that the persons who are charged with building an earthly temple will understand the structure of the heavenly temple and will be equipped to replicate it on earth. People who are going to be building the earthly temples, and I'm talking about the tabernacle of Moses and the temple of Solomon, they're going to understand that what they're building is a reflection of the heavenly temple. And they're going to be equipped both with resources, like with Moses, all the people brought the gold and the jewelry and the fabrics and the porpoise skins dyed purple and all of that. And like with David, he gathered together all the resources so that when Solomon came to be king, that he could just build the temple that God told David about. So the people who are assigned this are given the plan and the resources and the ability to be able to actually make this representation, this earthly representation of whatever's going on in the heavenly temple. So the tabernacle of Moses, again, Exodus 25:9, you must make the tabernacle and design its furnishings according to the pattern that I've showed you. And then, of course, all the people brought all the stuff. In Solomon's temple, 1 Chronicles 28:11-13, and verse 19, God actually gave David the plan for Solomon's temple. Then David gave his son Solomon the plans for the portico of the temple, its buildings, storehouses, upper rooms, inner rooms, and the rooms for the mercy seat. The plans contained everything David had in mind for the courts of the house of the Lord, for all the surrounding rooms, for the treasuries of the house of God, and of the dedicated things, for divisions of the priests and Levites, for all the work of service in the house of the Lord, and for all the articles of service in the house of the Lord. And verse 19, and all this, said David, all the details of this plan, the Lord has made clear to me in writing by his hand upon me. So all of the aspects of Solomon's temple was inspired. It was given to David by God. Okay, so we have both the tabernacle of Moses and Solomon's temple being actually directed by God, what they're going to look like, what's going to be in it, how big they are, all that. You know, Solomon built his temple and years go by, and the people are idolaters and they're wicked and so on. And so God says he's going to carry the people in Judah off to Babylon. And they're in Babylon for 70 years, and then they get sent back to Jerusalem, and they get to rebuild the city and the temple. And that's called the Second Temple. Zerubbabel is the one who built the Second Temple. And later on, before the time of Christ, Herod came along and embellished the temple and made it really big and beautiful. But it started out as Zerubbabel's temple. That's the Second Temple. Zechariah 1:16. Therefore, this is what the Lord says, I will return to Jerusalem with mercy, and there my house will be rebuilt, declares the Lord of hosts, and a measuring line will be stretched out over Jerusalem. And then Zechariah 4:8-10. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands will complete it. In other words, the temple will be built from beginning to end by one person, Zerubbabel. It's not going to be this really long ongoing process. Then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. For who has despised the day of small things? But these seven eyes of the Lord, which scan the whole earth, will rejoice when they see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. So God is actually very happy that his house is going to be rebuilt by Zerubbabel. All right, now we have another temple that we don't usually think about. It's called the Tabernacle of David. And this is when the Ark left the tabernacle of Moses at Shiloh, I think, and was carried off by the Philistines and then brought to Gibeon, I think, and then David took it from there to Jerusalem. 1 Chronicles 16:1-4, and then 37 and 38. So they brought the Ark of God and placed it inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And they presented burnt offerings and peace offerings before God. And when David had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord. And then he distributed to every man and woman of Israel a loaf of bread, a date cake, and a raisin cake. And David appointed some of the Levites to minister before the ark of the Lord, to celebrate, to give thanks, and to praise the Lord, the God of Israel. So you have to understand that we have people who are actually going to go into the presence of the ark. Okay, remember in the tabernacle of Moses, only Aaron could go into the place where the ark was, and even then only once a year on the Day of Atonement. But what we have here are just like people, the Levites going in and celebrating and praising God in his very presence. So David left Asaph and his brothers there before the ark of the covenant of the Lord to minister there regularly, according to the daily requirements, along with Obed-Edom and his 68 relatives. Obed-Edom, son of Jeduthun, and also Hosa were to be the gatekeepers. All right, so the Tabernacle of David is a very unique temple that doesn't have really much else associated with it. There's no Aaronic priesthood. There's no real sacrifices associated with it outside of for this dedication sacrifice. There's no altar burnt offering there, anything like that. So it's an unusual temple, and it's just the ark with people that come in and worship God. So the Tabernacle of David will be rebuilt, symbolically anyway, and maybe even perhaps literally. Acts 15:15-18. This is, I think, James talking, the apostle. The words of the prophets tend to agree with this, as it is written, after this I will return and rebuild the fallen tent of David. Its ruins I will rebuild, and I will restore it, so that the remnant of men may seek the Lord, and all the Gentiles who are called by my name, says the Lord who does these things that have been known for ages. So this was when they were trying to decide what to do with Gentile converts. Were they supposed to become Jews, or, you know, what was supposed to happen to them? And what they decided was that the church, which was now going to be comprised of Jews and Gentiles, was best typified by the Tabernacle of David, where people just went in and worshiped God without all the prerequisites of sacrifices and the Aaronic priesthood and, you know, all of that. There's nothing of the old covenant that's associated with the Tabernacle of David. The apostles decided that that is sort of the temple dispensation that is the one that belongs to the church. Okay, so the first principle is that the earthly temple always reflects the heavenly temple. And the second principle is that the people who are authorized or charged to rebuild the temple will understand that they're building a reflection of whatever's going on in the heavenly temple, and they'll have all the resources to do it. And the third principle is this, that the way each temple is configured illustrates something about the person of Christ, the plan of redemption, and God's relationship with his people. And I'm just going to touch on this really briefly. The tabernacle of Moses reflected the earthly life of Christ. Watch my Tabernacles of God video series. The tabernacle of David reflects the present, like right now, manifestation of Christ in his church by the Spirit. That we worship in spirit and truth, and we don't worship at a place, just like Jesus told the Samaritan woman, that God is seeking worshipers, people who will worship him in spirit and in truth. And this tabernacle of David is open to Jews and Gentiles alike. And the Temple of Solomon reflects the millennial reign of Christ. So all the symbolism that's in the Temple of Solomon is talking prophetically about the millennial reign. So let's talk about the third temple. This is the so-called tribulation temple. I've heard so many people talk about the third temple, and people talk about the Temple Institute and how people in Israel, different groups, are wanting to rebuild the temple, and they're getting a fast train going from Tel Aviv to the Temple Mount. And there are people who say, oh, we shouldn't be involved in that because the temple is going to be the temple of the Antichrist. It's a bad and wicked and evil temple, and so we shouldn't have anything to do with that. If we follow the principles that I just laid out for you, we're going to be able to figure out what it looks like, who's there, who's building it, where the resources come from. Okay, we'll be able to understand all of that because it's hidden in plain sight in the Word of God. All right, so let's take a look at the third temple. The end time tribulation third temple is called the Temple of God. So right there, we know that this is not the Antichrist temple. It's not the Temple Institute's temple. It's not any of those. It's God's temple. It's the temple of God. God is the one who is authorizing this temple. He authorizes all of his temples. You can't build a temple of God without him authorizing it and telling people how it's going to be done, showing people how it's going to be done, and then making provisions so that they can do it. All right, here's Revelation 11, 1 and 2. Then I was given a measuring rod like a staff, and I was told, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship there. But do not measure the court outside the temple. Leave that out, for it's given over to the nations. All right, so using the aforementioned principles of temple building, we can identify the architecture, the furnishings, and the kind of worship that's going to be in the temple just by examining the heavenly temple as depicted in the book of Revelation. That's so exciting that God put it all out there for us. All we have to do is look in the book of Revelation, see what's going on in the heavenly temple, and understand that whatever's going on in the heavenly temple in Revelation is going to be shadowed in the earthly temple of God. The book of Revelation is going to tell us who is authorized to build that temple. Okay, so we need to look at some terminology here, because a lot of times when we hear the word temple, we just think, you know, the whole temple structure. And there's actually a couple of words in the book of Revelation that we tend to think of as, you know, that, oh, that's the temple. One of them is the word temple. It's translated temple. And the other is the word tabernacle. And I remember looking at that and wondering about it, because in Revelation 16, both of those words are used. The temple of the tabernacle of God was opened. So I had to do a little study on what is the temple and what is the tabernacle and what's the difference between them. So the word temple that we see in Revelation and in other places as well, including 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where it talks about the man of sin going into the temple of God. It's the Greek word naos, and it's the sanctuary, but in particular, it's the actual holy place, where in the case of God's temple, it's where the ark is. It's the most holy, sacred place. It's not the whole temple structure. Okay, the whole structure, or, you know, building, as it were, is called the tabernacle, and that's a different Greek word. That's the Greek word skene, 4633. A temple is the actual part of the structure where God dwells, where the ark would be, and the tabernacle is the structure itself. A skene is a habitation. It's a tabernacle. It's a tent. It's usually considered a tent. So here's the passage in Revelation 15, 5 and 6. After these things I looked, and behold, the temple, the naos, of the tabernacle, the skene, of the testimony in heaven was opened, and out of the naos came seven angels having the seven plagues. And the Apostle Paul informs us that the man of sin will take his seat in the naos of God, the temple of God. 2 Thessalonians 2:4, and he will oppose and exalt himself above every so-called god or object of worship, so that he will seat himself in the naos, the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. So if we go by what we see in heaven, we see a tabernacle, a temporary structure, a tent. Okay, do you know that God lives in a tent right now? It's a temporary home, because someday all of that is going to go away, and God is going to live in the holy city along with us. So that the place where he's dwelling right now in heaven, he considers a tabernacle. It's a tent. It's a temporary place. And the presence of God is in the tabernacle, but it's in the part of the tabernacle called the naos, okay, or naos, or however you say it. It's the Holy of Holies. Now, the Ark of the Covenant is in the heavenly temple, so we can assume that somewhere the Ark of the Covenant is going to be brought out from wherever it's been since Jeremiah hid it prior to the Babylonians taking over the city, and it's going to be placed in the new tabernacle that's going to be erected. Revelation 11:19 tells us that the Ark of the Covenant is in heaven. Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the Ark of his covenant was seen in his temple, in his naos. So the Ark of the Covenant is going to be in the tabernacle that is the third temple. The golden altar of incense will be in the third temple as well. Revelation 8:3. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar, and he was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And again, this is going to have to be restored from wherever it's been hiding for all these many years. The temple in heaven actually has outer courts, and that's represented by the sea of glass mingled with fire that we see in Revelation 15:2. And I saw something like a sea of glass mingled with fire. And the sea of glass is sort of the equivalent of the bronze laver that was outside of the tabernacle, outside of the temple, where the priests would go to wash, okay? And it was bronze, and anything that's bronze represents judgment, okay? Bronze is the metal of judgment. Gold is the metal of divinity. And the sea of glass is outside of the tabernacle. And in heaven, there are outer courts where we see this sea of glass. But on the earthly temple, third temple, John is told that the outer courts aren't going to be there. So there isn't a sea of glass. There isn't a brazen altar. All of that is part of the outer courts. And the brazen altar isn't present in the heavenly temple. But we do see the sea of glass. And in the Old Testament, the laver was made of the mirrors of the women who ministered outside the tabernacle. Revelation 11, 1 and 2. Then I was given a measuring rod like a staff, and I was told, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship there, but do not measure the court outside. Now, it's also possible that the golden menorah will be present in the earthly temple as well, because in heaven, we do see seven lamps of fire before the throne of God, representing the sevenfold spirit, which is symbolized by the golden menorah that's in the earthly tabernacle of Moses, and it may be brought out as part of the third temple as well. Revelation 4, 5b, seven lamps of fire were burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. All right, so the third temple has worshipers. Okay, it has worshipers, and the worshipers are going to be counted. Revelation 11, 1. Go and measure the temple of God and the altar and count the number of worshipers there. The only people of God who are counted in Revelation are the 144,000 of Israel. Now, there's 200 million of the mysterious troops who are going to be executing the sixth trumpet judgment on the harlot. But here, the people of God are counted. They're the 144,000 of Israel. Revelation 7, 4, and I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel. So we know that there are worshipers in heaven. The 24 elders, they're enthroned as kings and priests, and they're seated in God's presence around his throne, which is the ark. Revelation 4, 4, and around the throne were 24 thrones, and on the thrones I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white robes, and they had crowns of gold on their heads. So the heavenly worshipers, the 24 elders, hopefully you and me, are singing. And Revelation 5, 9, and 10 tells us what our song is. They sang a new song saying, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to God, and we shall reign on the earth. Now, you have to understand that the 144,000 who are worshiping, who are counted, who are worshiping in the third temple, are also going to be kings and priests, just like the 24 elders. So they can sing that same song, but later on, they're going to have their own song that they sing. Revelation 14, 3. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders, and no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth. So the 144,000 are redeemed from the earth. They are the people, that first generation, who are going to take over the ministry from us once we go into heaven, once we get ready to leave. The third temple is on Mount Zion, not the Temple Mount and not Mount Moriah. Revelation 14:1. Then I looked, and behold a lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written on their foreheads. And this sort of takes us back to Revelation 3, the letter to the Church of Philadelphia, which is written to the 144,000 of Israel, and how they're going to be pillars in the temple and have the name of God on their forehead and have the name of the city of my God, Christ says, on their forehead and Christ's own new name. So they're associated with the temple. Unlike the second temple, which was built by Zerubbabel and later embellished by Herod, and that's the temple that Jesus went into, the presence of God is going to be in the third temple, the rebuilt temple, the so-called tribulation temple. The presence of God never filled the second temple after Zerubbabel built it. The presence of God was there with the tabernacle of Moses, and the presence of God came during the dedication of the temple at the time of Solomon, but God's presence was never in the second temple. The Ark of the Covenant was never in that second temple. God's presence hasn't been in the temple until the day Jesus walked in. Okay, he's the one who actually brought the presence of God back into the temple again. But once the temple was destroyed, once Jesus died, and the earthly temple was destroyed too, there hasn't been a temple that's had the presence of God in it since before the Babylonian captivity. But that third temple is going to have the presence of God. Revelation 7:2, "And I saw another angel ascending from the east, with the seal of the living God." And if we go back to Ezekiel 43:4, "The glory of the Lord entered the temple through the gate facing east." So when Christ returns, and this is prior to his visible second coming, he is actually going to cross over from the Mount of Olives from the east and go toward wherever this tabernacle is being set up. And his presence, the glory of God, is going to fill that place. So from all the things that we've learned about the heavenly temple in Revelation, we can now sort of determine what are the characteristics and the specifications for that third temple. Number one, it's going to be a temporary building. It's a tent. Number two, it's on Mount Zion, not the Temple Mount, not Mount Moriah. Number three, there will be no outer courts. Number four, there's going to be worshipers, spirit-filled people, the 144,000 who are kings and priests, who will be kings and priests anyway, and who are going to worship there. Fifth thing is the Ark of the Covenant will be there. The golden altar of incense will be there. Most likely the golden menorah will be there, and the manifest presence of God, maybe actually in the person of Christ. So notably absent from the third temple is a permanent structure. We don't see that in heaven. There is no permanent structure in heaven. In fact, God calls his home there a tabernacle, a tent, and it will be destroyed, and the permanent building, the New Jerusalem, is going to be sort of the temple. Okay, so there is no permanent building on the Temple Mount. Secondly, there's no Levitical priesthood. We don't see that there. We see worshipers, but the Levites and the priests, especially at the time of Moses, were not known for worshiping. They just did a lot of work killing animals and taking care of all the dirty work business that was associated with the tabernacle. The third thing is we don't see an altar for burnt offerings. So there's no animal sacrifices that are going to be taking place in that rebuilt third temple. Number four, the sacrifices and rituals that are associated with previous Old Testament temples, like the Tabernacle of Moses and Solomon's Temple and the Second Temple, they're not there. There are no sacrifices. There's no rituals. Okay. And the fifth thing is, and I'm bringing this up because other people are making a big deal about this, there's no need for a red heifer because we don't need the purification for any of this. whatever it is that the Temple Institute or whatever groups are wanting to build that third temple in Israel, whatever it is they're doing is not the Temple of God. The Temple of God is a reflection of what is going on in the heavenly temple, and we can see what's going on because Revelation shows it to us, and then we can actually see it on the earth as depicted in Revelation 11. All right, so the second thing that we have to remember is that there are people who are going to be authorized and charged to build the earthly temple, just like Moses was authorized to build the tabernacle in the wilderness, and like David received the plans and then handed them off to Solomon and all the resources to build Solomon's temple. And there was an authorization for Zerubbabel by the Spirit of God to construct the second temple. So there is going to be authorized people who are going to build that third temple, and we actually know who they are. But let's take a look at the second temple authorization. This is in Zechariah chapter 4, and using a variety of symbols, we know that Zerubbabel is the builder of the second temple, along with others, but he's the primary one who's tasked with this. And Zerubbabel then becomes kind of a type and shadow of the future third temple people who are going to be authorized to construct that. So let's take a look at Zechariah 4. I'm going to read the whole thing and I'm going to emphasize certain parts, okay? Then the angel who was speaking with me returned and woke me as a man awakened from a sleep. "What do you see?" he asked. "I see a solid gold lampstand with a bowl on top and seven lamps on it with seven spouts into the lamps. There are also two olive trees beside it." Okay, make a note of that. We're going to see that in Revelation. "One on the right side of the bowl and the other on its left." "What are these, my Lord?" I asked the angel who was speaking with me. "Do you not know what they are?" replied the angel. "No, my Lord," I answered. So he said to me, "This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit declares the Lord of hosts. What are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you will become a plain. And then he will bring forth the capstone accompanied by shouts of grace, grace to it." Then the word of the Lord came to me saying, "The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands will complete it. And then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you." So Zerubbabel was going to lay the foundation and put the capstone on the temple. And he was going to do it by the power of the Spirit of God. Verse 10, "For who has despised the day of small things? But these seven eyes of the Lord," which basically are the seven spirits of God, "which scan the whole earth, will rejoice when they see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel." Then I asked the angel, "Well, what are the two olive trees on the right and on the left of the lampstand?" And then I questioned him further, "What are the two olive branches beside the two gold pipes from which the golden oil pours?" "Do you not know what these are?" he inquired. "No, my Lord," I replied. So he said, "These are the two anointed ones who are standing beside the Lord of all the earth." Let's take a look at Revelation 11, 1 through 4. "Then I was given a measuring rod like a staff and was told, 'Go, measure the temple of God and the altar and count the number of worshipers there. But exclude the courtyard outside the temple. Do not measure it, because it's been given over to the nations, and they will trample the holy city for 42 months. And I will empower my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. These witnesses are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the Lord of the earth. This is the connection that helps us to understand that the two witnesses, in addition to all the other things they're doing, they're the ones who are going to be authorized and empowered to erect the tabernacle that's going to be that third temple on Mount Zion. The two witnesses, Elijah and Moses, will be authorized by God and empowered by the Spirit of God to build the tabernacle of David, okay, this version of the tabernacle of David, on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. The 144,000 of Israel will worship in the third temple. The presence of God will manifest over the ark. So, this is where it gets kind of crazy, is the third temple is not going to be the kind of temple that most people are expecting. Most people are expecting some kind of agreement between a future Antichrist and Israel to rebuild an actual temple on Mount Moriah, where the Dome of the Rock presently stands, or next to the Dome of the Rock. And they have plans that they've drawn up, but the plans are not from God, because the plans do not actually reflect what is going to be happening in God's heavenly tabernacle and what's located up there, what things, what furnishings are up there. Whatever man is doing is not what God is doing. And it's very likely, it's possible that there could be a man-made temple. But the temple that God is going to have as the third temple during the time of the tribulation, the one that his presence will go into, is the one that the two witnesses are going to erect. It's going to have the Ark of God in it. It's a tent. It's going to be on Mount Zion. It's going to have a golden altar. It's going to have worshipers there. It may have the golden menorah there as well. The 144,000 are going to worship there. It's going to be a Christian shrine, believe it or not. So it's not what people expect. The third temple is not authorized by any human agency. It's not authorized by any government or by any group of Jews who think they want to rebuild a temple. In fact, it's this unauthorized, humanly unauthorized temple, complete with the golden ark and all of that, that may be the catalyst that precipitates the persecution of the two witnesses and the 144,000 of Israel. My understanding is that when the two witnesses show up in their visible ministry, their visible public ministry, is they're going to set up this tabernacle, this tent, and they're going to be bringing out the ark and the golden altar and all of that and putting it in this tent, not on Temple Mount, but somewhere else. And then Christians are going to be worshiping there. Jewish Christians, Hebrew Christians, Israeli Christians are going to, you know, from all over the world, are going to be worshiping in that place. And it's going to be so offensive. It's going to be so, so offensive. And this is going to make it so that people are going to want to come against the two witnesses and the Jews in Israel of the synagogue of Satan, who say they are Jews but are not, but lie. They are the ones who are going to persecute the 144,000 of Israel in Jerusalem. It's the persecution there is going to be particularly heavy. And there's going to be people from the 12 tribes who are in other places. I'm not sure exactly where all they'll be. I think a lot of them will come to Jerusalem and be present sometime to worship in that place. But the powers that be are not going to be in favor of this. They are not going to be in favor of it. But this tabernacle is going to stand until the very last day of the two witnesses' ministry. On day 1260, the two witnesses will be killed by the newly resurrected beast who ascends from the bottomless pit, rises from the sea of death, who comes, and then he himself will go into the now abandoned temple, because by the time the two witnesses die, the 144,000 will be in heaven and their rapture. Most of believers who have come to faith, once we're gone, they will have been martyred and they'll be in heaven. And Christ himself will lead the remnant of Israel into the wilderness, and there will be no presence of God anymore in that tabernacle. And I've done a video on this, and I think it's pretty good. You might want to watch it. I'll leave a link to it. That tabernacle with the ark is going to stand empty. And that's when the beast is going to go into the temple of God and proclaim that he's God. Oh my goodness, so much drama. I hope you can see here that God has already given us all the information that we need to know what that third temple is going to be like, who's going to build it, what's going to be in it. It's already all taken care of. We know that. And we know that anything that man does or anything that man tries to authorize is not the temple of God. God always initiates and gives people the information so that they can accurately reflect whatever is going on in the heavenly temple. I hope you've enjoyed this video. I had a lot of fun making this Bible study. I love the temples of God. They symbolically tell us so much about the plan of redemption and salvation and the person of God and Christ and how God manifests in the world. And right now we are the spiritual tabernacle of David, Jews and Gentiles who both can worship in spirit and in truth. All right, leave a comment in the comment section and we'll see you on another video. Till then, have a blessed day.